Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Seattle Mariners, winning the series 2-1. They are currently 7 games back in the AL East and 2 games currently out of the American League wildcard. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts. Jeremy, how are you?
Barely hanging on.
By your pinky?
Barely hanging on, my friend. By a backup catcher, a guy who's going to be out of baseball in 18 months, and 2 borderline relievers.
And by guy out of baseball, we're talking about our Game 2 starter.
I'm aware.
Okay. Also joining us tonight from Broward County, Florida. Very close. You guys are close together down there in South Florida. Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing okay after a walk-off win, you know, winning a series finally, the first one after the All-Star break, so I'll take it, but still not expecting great, great things in the next few series here, but at least we won one, so I'll take that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine where I would be if we lost today. Mm-hmm. It would be a dark, dark place, let me tell you.
That's exactly how I feel. If we lost today after, you know, tying it at 2-2, I was just like, it's over, should have sold. What a waste of 6 stupid prospects that we could have kept, I guess.
Cal Raleigh stole third base in extra innings, and they couldn't get him home. So that was pivotal. So how are we feeling? I mean, it's, you know, based on these early comments, we're not beaming with optimism here, but we got a tough series. I think that's against the Texas Rangers coming up starting Friday. So we have an off day on Thursday, but I'm expecting more of the same, basically, with maybe a few extra losses sprinkled in, given the toughness of the schedule. Jeremy.
Yeah, I feel a little bit differently about this series because the Rangers, who I thought were going to sell, didn't sell. So they still have the majority of their team in place. I'm going from a 6.3 when I last recorded after the Dodgers series to a 5.1. So like I said, I'm barely hanging on here. They get a day off, which I think is needed. It's going to let them set up the bullpen. But I'm like watching the games with one eye open, one eye closed. The schedule is brutal, and we could come out of August down 6 to 8 games in the wild card if they don't start playing well.
The Rangers, ironically, are about where they were last year, and they went on a run. So, you know, they kept Eovaldi. They have Scherzer back. Who knows? Hopefully we're not their launching pad to get that much closer. Nick, what are your thoughts?
Honestly, it's not the Rangers that I'm worried about. It's the Royals and then the Astros right after that I'm more worried about. You know, I don't want to go into that Royals series and get swept if they have Seth Lugo, Brady Singer, and Cole Reagan's lined up for us again. You know, I don't want to get swept in Kansas City where they played way better on the at home than they have in the road. So don't want to get swept there, and I don't want to go to Houston and get crushed there either. So you have to take care of the Rangers. They're probably the easiest team on the schedule in the next 10 games.
Is that how, do you know if that's how it lines up for us?
So I looked at it. I have no idea, but, you know, it could happen that way. We're going to at least get one of them.
Yeah.
Mathematically, we're going to get one of them.
Most likely. Yeah. All right. So we'll get into our midweek top five. We won the series. So we've been getting chirped quite a bit. And by we, I mean me, on social media about all the negativity, not giving the Red Sox enough credit. But I think on the podcast, I know last night was a little intense with the trade deadline reaction, but I feel like we're not as negative as people say. You know, I think we're more objective than people give us credit for. So, so basically, it's weird. I haven't hosted a regular season show in quite some time. So, being in the host seat, I'm actually going to lead this off, as it turned out. So, starting in the five slot on our midweek top five, I'm going to go with Nick Pivetta, who had probably one of his best starts in quite some time and probably his second or third best start of the season. Game one, he had tons of run support, so there's that, but he still pitched 6 2/3 innings, only gave up 6 hits, 3 earned runs, walked 1, and struck out 10. I think it's been since April since he's had a double-digit strikeout game. So did everything he could do to get the Red Sox off, you know, on the right start. The offense was able to lock in, and it was an easy win. That game was over by the fourth or fifth inning, and and Pivetta hung in there. Basically, I mean, just the 6 hits he gave up, 3 up, 3 down in the first inning, 3 up, 3 down in the second inning. Finally, in the third inning, he allowed a couple of hits. Mitch Haniger, Josh Rojas strung together some hits, but a very dominant start for Pivetta across 6 2/3. Jeremy, thoughts?
Yeah, it's one of those starts where you know you have to go deep in the game, which obviously adds pressure, and he goes deep in the game. Because this was the game before they brought in reinforcements. I think they moved Weissert either the night before or the morning of the game. So you knew they were thin and not a lot of arms available in the bullpen, and he brought it and pitched deep through 109 pitches. So Cora obviously understood that as well, because he's been trying to get Pivetta out between 85 and 95 pitches. you know, I'll just say generally about the player now that he's here and he's going to be here, he's pitching for his next contract. I expect him to be better. He has to be better for his own individual purposes, and he has to be better if this team's going to stay in relevance. So I'm looking for starts like this moving forward. I love the strikeout number because when Pivetta's going, he's punching people out. And so all the signs were there that he was going to be sharp, and he was. So I think he's going to get Kansas City next. No. He pitches in the Rangers series. He pitches the last game of the Rangers series. So probably on the bump with a chance to win the series on Sunday, and I'm looking forward to that start.
Nick, thoughts on Pivetta?
You know, it's just really nice to see Nick Pivetta have 10 strikeouts against a team that strikes out even more than the Red Sox do. So it's nice to see them go out there and do what he's supposed to do against a team that's just strikes out a ton. So I'm glad that happened. You know, just 3 runs against the Mariners. He did what he's supposed to do. That's who he is. He's a 4.5 ERA guy. That's who he has been through his entire career. So about 6 innings, 3 runs. I mean, if that's what you get out of him, you can't be mad. And he got the win, and good for him.
Just going through his game logs right now. So in his very first start of the season, ironically, against the Mariners, he struck out exactly 10 of them over 6 innings, gave up just 1 earned run. And then, I don't remember this, but in early July, take it for what it's worth, against the Marlins and Oakland, he got a pair of 10 strikeout games. So he's had exactly 4 of them. And I just wonder, what would we have fetched for him? And we don't have to put exact names on it, but I just wonder if he could have been one of the biggest hauls of the season. You look at what the Blue Jays got for Kikuchi. Flaherty and was supposed to go to New York. They backed out. Apparently he had an injection in his back. The Yankees got sketched. Flaherty ends up in LA, but I think you would have got a pretty good haul for a guy like Pivetta.
I'm not great at evaluating the minor league prospect. I would say somewhere between a 15th and a 20th prospect.
I think you get a top 10 for sure. At least one. Nick, what are your thoughts?
Well, he doesn't have any term left, so you're getting him for 60 days. So that diminishes the value tremendously. And it's not like he has, I mean, he's like Nick said, he's a 4.5 ERA guy, which is fine. Paxton is slightly less valuable, and he fetched an unnumbered prospect. I don't see anything greater than that. Go ahead, Nick.
I think Pivetta would have slotted in between a Kikuchi and then the next tier of a pitcher. So he's not Flaherty. I think Kikuchi's probably slightly better, and then he's right below Kikuchi. So Kikuchi got like Loader Fido or whatever from the Astros, who's a pretty decent prospect. I think you could have gotten a, you know, like a top 8-ish prospect for Nick Pivetta, even on the rest of this contract. I think you could have gotten more for Kenley Jansen, and that's who I think you should have traded if you look back at it, what Tanner Scott got and what other pitchers got at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, Pivetta has had some not so great starts recently, got tagged for 4 runs against Oakland. Colorado really blew up his ERA with that 7 earned run outing over 2 2/3 innings. But Pivetta, he's been that streaky guy. He's been up and down. But the one thing that I think would have been attractive for him is the fact he is a big game pitcher. He usually shows up in big games and gets it done. And you see how fired up he gets, you know, when he ends the inning on a punch out, you know, just pounds his chest. And most teams, when they evaluate a pitcher, they always think they can fix him. They always think they can tweak something and get just a little bit more out of him. So I just think he would have been highly desirable if the Red Sox, pivoted to selling. And I mean, we spoke about it at length last night. I think by the time October rolls around, we're going to look back and say, man, we could have got a couple of decent arms if we just did that. But let's go ahead, Nick, who's in the four slot?
So in the four slot, we got Dom Smith. He went 5-for-12 with 3 RBIs, 3 doubles, a home run in the first game in the win, and 3 runs scored. You know, Dom Smith has done a pretty good job filling in for Casas all season long. He's been incredibly hot as of late. He did make an error in the series, but, you know, he's just a replacement kind of player that we picked up for free, and he's doing a lot of – without him, who would you have at first base at this point? Bobby Dalbec and Romy Gonzalez. So he's doing enough. And, you know, when Casas comes back, it's going to be tough to see if they DFA him or if they DFA someone else. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, on that last point, I think they have to DFA him because he's a complete redundancy. If he was right-handed, I think he'd have a chance to stick around. But the way Romy's swinging it with limited at-bats, I think that's his spot. So I just don't know when he's coming back. Collectively, the three of us looked up his stats. He went 0-for-3 with a walk in the DH spot yesterday in Worcester. I guess it's being reported that he still has pain, so they're not even playing him in the field. It seems like he's a little too early for a rehab, you know? So I don't know why he's down there right now if he still is dealing with pain. But, and I want to hate Dom Smith. I wanted to hate him since that inexcusable comment about not extending his arm to catch that ball at first base that he whiffed on, costing runs in a game that we end up losing. We talked about that a lot on the podcast after that game. But I can't. I mean, the guy's hitting. He's up to 6 home runs, 33 RBIs. Really good series here. I know he had the error, but he is not an automatic out. He's been hitting, I think, 6th in the lineup, and he's been a productive member of the lineup, and it's a little bit surprising. On a team full of athletes, he's very clearly not an athlete. He runs like he's stuck in the mud. So he kind of clogs the bases a little bit, but I can't hate on him. He's doing his job, and I think he's extending his career by the way he's played in the last 60 days.
So every now and then he does make the cut here, and honestly, he's exceeded expectations big time. You know, when you lose Tristan Casas, and I think before we got Dom Smith, we were getting a little bit of Bobby Dalbec, and fortunately that didn't last long, but Smith has been pretty solid. I mean, I don't have his exact stats up at the moment, but he rips enough extra base hits. You know, he's got 6 dingers on the air. It seems like most of them seem to come in high leverage situations, but over the past, couple of weeks, he's hitting .302 with a .362 on base. And I just,
Terry, without looking it up, what's his OPS? He's played in 71 games. What's his OPS?
In 71 games? Man. League average is about .720. I'll say he's probably about .765.
.722.
Okay. So he's about
league average. I would have guessed .690. So I think he's been better. And, you know, now that he's starting to hit for power too.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple of extra base hits. I mean, just in the finale today, he, I think it was in the 6th inning, he ripped a double. And then in the next at-bat, Danny Jansen was able to drive him in to tie the game, actually. And then, it went into extras. But I just, you look at all the first basemen we've had, and I mean, Is he stellar? No. Would you have a better platoon situation in certain situations? Yeah. But, I mean, it could have been way worse. It absolutely could have been way worse than Dom Smith.
How much credit do you give Breslow for going and finding this type of player, given that their expectation is to plug Cassis into that spot for the next 5 years?
I mean, you got to give him some credit. I mean,
look how tough it is for him. Look how tough it is. I love it.
But I mean, you're gonna hit on some things. I mean, the thing that Breslow really hit on, you know, has been Tyler O'Neill. That's what I'd give him the most credit for. But it's worked out. But it's been painful at times too. But he's been adequate, and I did not think he would be adequate.
Yeah,
I'll give Breslow some credit for going out getting a Dom Smith and a Garrett Cooper at the time, who they did DFA. But if this was Heim Bloom, you know it would be Bobby Dahl back for 120 games for the next two seasons. You just know that's what's going to happen. So I do give Breslow a little bit of credit going out there and recognizing that Bobby Dahlbeck stinks. He absolutely sucks. And got Dom Smith, who has been league average OPS, league average hitter, and stuck him in the lineup, and he has kept the Red Sox afloat. So I do give Breslow some more credit for that.
I agree with Nick. And I like the fact that he didn't put all his eggs in one basket. He went and got a couple of guys, and one guy stunk and he got DFA'd, and the other guy's really solidified the sixth spot in the lineup. So I give him credit. I do. I don't want to, but I have to here.
Smith has 16 doubles on the season, which I think is significant for 71 games. I mean, he wasn't here the full season, and
he was terrible initially too, by the way. So a lot of these numbers are more recent.
Probably in the last 6 or 7 weeks. Yeah. And he's drawn 24 walks, and his on base is about 87 points higher than his average. So, I guess you'll take it. I guess you'll take it. And as far as Tristan Casas goes, why mess with it? Why bring him up? He's still fighting through pain, according to reports in the last 24 hours. I'm not saying we wouldn't be better without him. We probably would be, but look at when we started winning. Look at when we started going on those runs. Casas was already down with his injury. I mean, we've treaded water. Offensively, there's not a lot to complain about with this team. They score runs. Guys step up, you know, whether it's Rafaela some nights, Abreu some nights, Duran, Romy Gonzalez, as Jeremy mentioned, he's hitting .283 right now with the Red Sox. Very quietly, an excellent utility guy.
And good pinch hitter.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, just what inning was it, the 9th or the 10th today? He felt like a 10 to 12 pitch at bat. He was up against Snyder. I think that was in the 9th inning actually. And he just kept following him off. And then finally just ripped, a single into right center and, you know, got on base. So, another guy who's just kind of, it's almost like a poor man's Moreland and Pierce situation with those two guys. It's not a perfect platoon, and Smith is getting most of the starts at first, but
Terry, before we move on, I want to comment on one thing you said, that don't mess with the Casas Smith situation. I agree and disagree. I agree if he's not right. If he still has, like, you know, we're getting reports, it's still lingering, but he's good to go. Don't do that. Don't do that. If he's perfectly healthy, if he recovers fully, you have to put him in the lineup, because the upside with the power, you just can't ignore that. Well, you just can't.
The reports are is he's still feeling pain. So
he should not. Again, I said this earlier. That rehab assignment seems awfully early to me.
April is, well, I shouldn't say April, but March is what, 7 or 8 months from now? He should be healed by then. Why screw up potentially next year if you're cruising regardlessly in terms of, you know, offensive production? Why mess with? I would say he's probably, well, I wouldn't say he's the second best hitter on the team. That's Duran or Devers, whichever way you want to rank them. But, you know, he's probably your third best hitter. And I don't know. Why be stupid? Nick, any thoughts on it?
No, just like Jeremy said, if Tristan Casas is 100% healthy, there's no chance of leaving him out of the lineup. But if he's not, obviously, you can't, I mean, risk the future with a guy that you're obviously invested into. Breslow said it on the broadcast today that he's envisioned Tristan Casas being an everyday first baseman for the years to come. But, you know, if he is healthy and he says he's healthy, there's zero chance you can leave him out of this lineup just because of his offensive potential. And at least he gives Devers and Duran some protection in the lineup over a guy like Rob Resnider, who is not as scary to pitchers as like Tristan Casas is. So if he's healthy, you have to put him in the lineup. So I'll leave it at that, I guess.
All right, let's move on. Number three on the midweek top five. Nick, who is it?
So Masataka Yoshida has raised his season OPS to 750 somehow. I never thought I would say that after it was below 600 about a month and a half ago. So Masataka Yoshida went 5-for-12 this series with 4 runs scored, 4 RBIs, and a home run. He had his big game in the first game where he went 3-for-5 with a home run and 4 RBIs. He had a hit in each game after that. And, you know, Yoshida's been hot for the last month and a half, and at least going to give him some credit that he's gotten his OPS to about 750. He's been above league average bat for the last month and a half. So I'll give him some credit, even though I wish he was traded at the deadline. I wish Bloom never signed him. So it's tough giving Yoshida credit, but I'll give him some credit in back-to-back episodes here.
Yeah, I mean, just big picture first, and then I'll talk about the series. We want Yoshida to produce at a high level here the last 2 months of the season so that he becomes marketable, because he doesn't have a spot on this team moving forward, and his contract is a serious problem. Now, we're going to have to do the Pablo Sandoval thing and eat some of the money, but at least we can get some of it off the books and free that spot up. Because, frankly, you know, we already have too many designated hitters. But since that home run in Yankee Stadium, he's been on fire. He's hitting the ball to all three sections of the field. He had a double in this series, a home run in the big game on Monday, like Nick said. So he's hitting for power. He's not just a singles guy. I when he comes up in a big spot, I just feel really confident that he's going to put the ball in play and give yourself a chance to get the ball down and get on base. He's also, you know, walks at a high rate. So I don't root against the player, because either he's going to help the club now or he's going to increase his value so we can move him. So, you know, and I think Cora recognizes that, which is why he hit third in all three games this series.
So he very quietly, well, I shouldn't say quietly at this point, but he's gone on a tear, much like he did in the early part of 2023. I mean, that's the type of torrid pace he's been on recently. As you guys have said, OPS up to 753. One of the things that's really appealing right now is his strikeout rate is 14.3%. That's low. There's not many, I can't say everyday guys because he's not starting against lefties, but there's not many hitters in the league that play at least half the games that are going to strike out that fewer. And then as far as his recent numbers, just in the last month, he's hitting 306 with a 376 on base, a few home runs in that time, driven in 22 runs. I'm just kind of bummed he didn't start this a month earlier than he did. He had that thumb injury, but had he picked up this pace a little bit sooner, maybe an offensively starved team might have called about Yoshida. So it's annoying that we still had him. Had Breslow been able to move him, I'm sure nobody called, but had Breslow been able to move him, that would have been the best move at the deadline, regardless of what we did to add to the team to get that money off the books. You get that money off the books, your payroll next year is $136 million going into the winter, which is nothing. You'd have over...
There's no scenario where he would be able to move the entire contract. There's no scenario. It's how much money do the Sox have to eat?
True.
So I get your point, and I don't disagree with your point, but we were never going to get there. I mean, I envision if we can get 50% of it picked up by whoever acquires them, I think that's a win.
Yeah, I mean, if they were going to eat money, I suppose they'd probably eat $8 million of it. The other team would have to pay him $10 million, which, you know, if he keeps up this type of production, he would be about a $10 million a year player. So, but didn't happen. When you say the Pablo Sandoval situation, I think that's going to end up being Trevor Story. I think he's more likely because he just doesn't give you hardly anything at the plate. Is he good defensively? Yeah, but you've got so many guys that are close.
Why are we talking about his play? He hasn't played. It doesn't even get to that. You got to put a guy at shortstop that's at least going to play. And so I don't disagree with that either, but for different reasons.
I'm just
the only thing that broke down on Pablo Sandoval was his belt buckle. Okay.
He just went to the buffet as soon as he got paid, but
he really did.
Yeah. I'm just saying Yoshida gives you more than Story. So I would rather peddle off Story. And they're both here for, I think, the same number of years. Like they both expire after, I think, the 2027 season. So it is what it is. It's so annoying how we have all this dead money all the time. You know, we waited forever for the Pablo deal to expire, the Pedroia deal to expire. We were still paying David Price for three more years beyond his time in Boston. It's unbelievable. The bad deals we sign. Let's move on to number two in the midweek top five. Jeremy, who do we got?
Brian Bayo went 6 1/3, 7 hits, 2 earned, walked 2, struck out 7 through 98 pitches. I thought he looked pretty good today. I didn't expect this, but he gave you a chance to win. As an aside, the bullpen didn't give up a hit between Sims, Winkowski, and Jansen. 2 2/3, 0 hits, 2 base runners via walk. So the pitching was really, really good today. A game you had to win. I think Nick said before we got going on the podcast that every relevant team won today except for the Orioles. So to win this game froze, you know, the standings for a day. And also I think it gives you a chance to springboard forward and get out from this. We can't win a series thing that's been going on since the All-Star break. So, you know, obviously Bayo knew the importance of the start, and it makes me a little bit slightly more optimistic about him moving forward. The last thing I'll say is Bayo has to be significantly better in the back end of the season than he's been. He has to. He's got to get that ERA down into the fours, down to 4.5. He has to be a reason why we are winning games. So today was encouraging. We'll see him again in the Kansas City series. So he's going to have a tough test there. And, you know, let's hope this is a sign of good things to come from Brian Bayo.
Nick.
Although the line for Brian Bayo was encouraging, after watching the start, he did walk the nine hitter once. Cora did try to stretch him for the seventh inning for another time, which he has done in the past, and he has failed multiple times. And then he failed again to get through the seventh inning. Cora was trying to save a little bit more of the bullpen. He had to bring in Sims in his Red Sox debut to get out of a situation. I think he had first and third with one out, and I think Sims, he did get out of it. But I would like to see Bayo go out there and finish every inning he starts. I think, you know, you can't walk the nine-hitter in a terrible Mariners lineup. It just can't happen. So although he did make a step forward, I still don't think he's good enough. I don't think he's lived up to the hype. I would like to see him make even a bigger step forward and go out there and dominate and throw more strikes and maybe get some separation between his fastball at 96 and his changeup at 90 or 89. I think it's too close together, and it's just he gets hit if he doesn't throw strikes and paint the corners. So I think I need more out of him. He got extended, and I need more out of him.
The good news is he has the talent to be better. So that's certainly possible.
So I'm at the point with Bayo where I don't have this impending sense of doom when he starts, because it was ugly. And if you look at his overall numbers, ERA still north of 5, WHIP right around 1.40. Ugly, ugly numbers across the board. But you look at his last four starts, they were against the Kansas City Royals, the Los Angeles Dodgers, New York Yankees, and then today, the Seattle Mariners. In all three starts, he gave up 3 earned runs or less. So I think the tide is finally starting to turn. I don't know what's behind that, but he's a lot more relaxed out there. He's a lot more composed. I'd like to see the strikeout numbers come up a little bit more consistently. He did strike out 7 today. He struck out 7 against the Dodgers. Still a little bit prone to the home run ball, but I think he's trending the right way. And if he could just end the season on a good note, be consistent over these last 8 weeks, I'll feel a lot better about 2025 with this rotation, but it's going to be a while before I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, he's finally living up to expectations, because he's still a career 466 guy at this point. Consistency is just isn't really a thing for him in his 3-year career. So we'll see, but he's going to pitch against the Royals again next. Actually, he went 6 1/3 against them. Let's see, 7 hits, 3 earned, only struck out 3. So it would be nice to see him build off of that, but I figured he could be solid today, and he was. Any more thoughts on Bayo? All right. Number one shouldn't be a mystery here, but who is it, Jeremy?
Rafael Devers has been as locked in as you can be. He went 7 of 13, 2 multi-hit games, had a hit in every game, four RBIs Tuesday with a double and a home run. And then today, Wednesday, hits the game winner, two doubles, the game winning RBI. He's so locked in that I have absolutely no understanding why the Mariners chose to pitch to him in that spot. So O'Neill's the ghost runner at second, no outs. Why would you not walk him? Or nibble at the corners and do one of the unintentional, intentional walk things. To leave that ball where they did and give him an opportunity to put it in play, thank you. Thank you, but I'm blown away that they even put him in a position to do what he did today. But he's been unbelievable. And I'll tell you right now, he's locked in because he doesn't get cheated on anything. His swings and misses, foul balls, like everything is all go. And for him to be able to consistently put the ball in play with that approach is not something you see that often. He only struck out once in 13 plate appearances. So I can't say enough with regards to, and I'll say this too as an aside, I've stopped worrying about him defensively. A year ago, a ball gets hit to third base and you're like, oh, here we go. And then he fields it and you're like, well, okay, that's only half the battle. But he's been really a lot more consistent as a defender. He's never going to be a player that gets the balls that, you know, more athletic people could get to, like Rafael is an example. He gets the balls and you're like, how the hell did he even get to that? That's not who Devers is. But as long as he's making the plays at him and he's a steady contributor defensively, he's just been honestly awesome.
Nick.
There's not enough good things I can say about Rafael Devers this season, honestly. He's having his best season by far. He's batting over 300. He's batting 306, which is actually eighth in Major League Baseball. He has a 990 OPS now, which I think is fifth in Major League Baseball. There's only three guys with a OPS over 1,000, and that's Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Shohei Ohtani. So he's joining that kind of club right now. His walks have been ticking up. He's got 47 walks already this season. He's 62 is the most he's ever had in his career. So he's getting better at that aspect of the game. I think he's taken himself from a very good player to a star this season, and I hope it stays that way. And like Jeremy said, you're not scared of him at third base anymore. I still think he's below average third baseman, but he's not atrocious. He's not the worst player in the game at third base anymore. So you can live with him at third base, and he's definitely gotten better. And it kind of – I think a lot of people criticize him for not being in like great with the media, not speaking a lot of English. But I think it shows that he's put a lot of effort into his defense and improving as he's getting to his mid to late 20s now.
Nick kind of stole some of my thunder there with the league-wide stats. I will add, though, that he is third in slugging right now behind just Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani. As far as Devers goes, it is his best season, and it shows. I mean, even in previous years, I mean, he hasn't had a bad season since 2018. I mean, he's been a very good producer offensively. But he goes through these streaks where he'll be firing on all cylinders. He'll be doing exactly what he needs to do, whether it's just rip the ball up the gap or put it into the outfield seats. And sometimes when things aren't going so well, he's just home run happy. He's trying to murder the ball. This is the most consistent I've seen him when having a patient approach at the plate. He's doing exactly what he needs to do every time up. And situationally, he's far more elite this year than he has been. And I think Devers is going to be an MVP in his career. At one point, he's going to have that off the charts season. you know, the one we talk about when he goes to Cooperstown. And naturally, I was trying to look to see where he was compared to Judge. And the sad part is it's still not even close. As Nick said, Devers has a 981 OPS. Judge is 150 points higher than that. He's nearly 100 points higher in slugging percentage. Judge is 70 points higher in on base. I mean, either Aaron Judge or Mike Trout's going to be the greatest hitter of our generation, I feel like. And Trout kind of flamed out at age 30. Judge is age 32. And as long as he can stay healthy, I don't see why he doesn't have four or five MVP caliber seasons in front of him. But I love what I'm seeing from Devers, and I can't wait till we finally have some weapons around him. We did for a little while with Casas till he got hurt, but
he's been Terry, fun where to watch. Do you think Devers is in offensive WAR in Major League Baseball?
I already
what
know.
Number? Where's he?
Yeah, okay. He's 3.8. Yeah, I looked at that.
Which is sixth in baseball, and Duran's tied for seventh. But only Judge, Witt Jr., Henderson, Ohtani, and Soto are ahead of him at this point. So that's the kind of company he's in.
Nick, go ahead.
Who do you think finishes higher in MVP voting this year, Duran or Devers? So I've asked this question to a couple of my friends, and they have all said Duran easily. And I think that is stupid. I think it's Devers, and it's not even close. I think Devers will finish like fifth, and Duran will finish like 20th. Like, that's where I think it's that big of a difference. I know Duran's having a great, great season, but I think Devers is a totally different level.
Well, go ahead, Jeremy. You go.
So for me, the award is not just offensive stats, and I know that's not real life, but for me, the most valuable player is the best overall player in baseball, and Duran is a better overall player. If you look up and using WAR, because I just went through all the stats, Duran's a top 10 offensive and defensive player. I just had it up. I think he's sixth when using both metrics. Devers is 18th. The only reason why I think Devers ultimately will get more votes is his power numbers can't be ignored. I mean, he is and the weight, like Yankees home runs, like he's hitting home runs when we need them. He's not doing the home run when the game's over, we're down, you know, 10-3 and he hits a solo job. Like, his home runs always seem to matter, and so they get more attention. But Duran is having one hell of a season, man. And Duran was not bad in this series. He didn't make our list, but he was 5-13. Two extra base hits, an RBI, a stolen base, had two multiple hit games and a hit in every game. So, I mean, it's not like we can sneeze at Duran's series. It's just Devers at times is carrying the run production.
So I agree with Nick. I think it will end up being Devers. I think
I agreed with Nick.
I do too. Oh, okay. Well, you
that's just Terry inability to agree with anything I say, but go on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Nick. So as far as this season goes, Devers is not going to finish higher than 30. Might end up fourth, depending on how Bobby Witt finishes the season. He's been very good. We're going to see him shortly, early next week, actually, when we face the Royals. But as far as Duran goes, he's very good. I he could be an MVP at some point as well. His power numbers would have to tick up further than what they are. And I think there's potential for that. And Duran is the better all around player though, when it comes down to it. It's just the MVP category. Those are all predicated on power numbers. You know, I mean, if they weren't, Luis Arraez would have been an MVP at least twice in the last 3 or 4 years. But where Duran actually really shines is he's second in all of MLB. He's actually leading the American League, actually, in doubles with 33. Devers, in comparison, only 26. Now, Duran has the wheel. Some of those would be singles for most players, so he's stretched some of them out. Interestingly, you'd think Duran would have the triples.
13 triples.
Okay. I'm showing 12, unless he had one today. He might have. But Bobby Witt is only, he's got 10. So I'm not sure Duran has that category wrapped up. But still, I mean, it's impressive to get into double-digit territory there. Duran's a little bit more electric. I think he can impact the team in ways that Devers doesn't, but unfortunately, Chicks dig the long ball, and the power numbers are just going to win the day. You have them both, so, you know, so that's all that matters. But yeah. So I guess on that, we can wrap, and we'll be back with a series preview show that will drop later on in the day. And it's going to be a game time decision as far as what the Friday show is, but we will still be back with you Friday morning for your AM commute. And we've had a very wonky lineup this week. Part of that was because of me not being available last weekend. But everything shifts back to normal this Sunday, and I think for the foreseeable future. So take care.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water. But we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.